It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
They have this panther sound effect that is just the cheesiest, stupidest sounding thing. Big voice guy going, "Panther goal scored by Sam Reinhart."
Where'd you get that thing?
I trapped it. Been keeping it in my bathroom at the motel, feeding it old pizza.
It's Mike Shope.
If you're calm, that wondrous big cat will be calm too. But if you're scared, that beautiful death machine will do what God made it to do, namely, eat you with a smile on its face.
And the Bulldog. On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Schedule day. It's not for everyone. We've had a couple of guests recently that have been more along the lines of, you know, just the guy in your golf foursome, and you're telling him all about the Barkies and the Birdies and the Sandies. It's like, you know what? Just tell me what I owe.
that's me golfing. You've experienced that. Like, I don't know a giraffe. What the hell are you talking
just
about?
Just tell me
here?
What I owe.
Just tell me. Yeah, right.
Exactly. I read this in my head while I'm trying to play.
Right. I have enough trouble with that as it is. Just playing.
Yes. Maybe the comparison holds a little bit of water. Joining us now on the Wes Herr hotline is Marcus Mosher, Locked On Cowboys. Just wrote a piece for a website called BuffaloDown.com on Keon Coleman. We're going to want to talk to Marcus about that as well. Marcus, I don't know your work that well, but I take it from your Twitter. You're in the camp of, yeah.
Worry when we get there.
Get me the schedule. Can I just avoid all the noise?
Yeah, this sucks. I hate all the leaks and stuff. I just want to know, is my team playing on Thanksgiving? What time? And if they're playing on Christmas, where am I going? That's all I really care about, because we know who these teams are playing and where they're playing. Maybe I'm old, but I just don't get it.
Well, in terms of Dallas, you get opening night, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. I guess it can never be that big a shock when the Cowboys are in prime spots. But
it's not. We come to expect all this kind of stuff now with Dallas, but my poor family, they hate it when I'm gone all the time. But listen, it's the Dallas Cowboys, you're America's team. What do you expect?
Right. What kind of expectations do you have for them? We have a guest on every week, Sam Paniadovich, who talks betting from BetMGM. And I asked him last week, who's a bad team you think might be good? And he said, can I use Dallas? I mean, 7-10, but the injuries, how good a team can that be?
It's really hard. Right now over on BetMGM, their win total is set at 7.5, which seems really low when you have, you know, quarterback like Dak Prescott, you know, receiver like CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons on defense. But I just don't think odds makers are buying into this roster being as good as it was a couple of years ago. Do I think they could potentially go 9-8, maybe 10-7? Sure. But their division's really good. Their schedule's really tough. And with the first-year head coach in Brian Schottenheimer, I just don't know how much we should expect. I think they're going to be in a bunch of games, but I don't think this is a team that anybody should be worried about right now in the postseason.
How much of a surprise at all was it that Schottenheimer ended up in that chair, Marcus?
I mean, it was pretty surprising. I think once we saw that, like, they weren't going to interview, like, Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn and some of the other top coordinators in the cycle, I think we started to come to the realization that, hey, maybe Brian Schottenheimer really does have a chance here. The players vouch for him, and I think that's part of the reason why he's here. But I thought for sure Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones would chase a big name. And I, as much as I respect Brian Schottenheimer, that's not him.
Marcus Mosher. So also George Pickens, Marcus. That's interesting.
I guess. There's a lot of drama that comes with George Pickens as somebody who lives here in Erie, Pennsylvania, and got a really good chance to watch a lot of George Pickens in Pittsburgh. I personally wouldn't want to be in the George Pickens business, but I think the Cowboys were so desperate to find a number two receiver that they're willing to overlook some of the baggage, and they're looking at it like, hey, this is a 7 or 8 month rental. If it doesn't go well, we can move on. It's a risk, but I understand why they're taking it.
Yeah, I also wouldn't have wanted to go anywhere near Pickens myself for the Bills, But my favorite thing about the transaction is that it doesn't come with a contract, right? So if you're ever maybe going to get a guy like that to be his best self, which has been, I think, somewhat of a challenge for him so far in Pittsburgh early on in his career, maybe this is it. Because he knows he's playing for a contract somewhere, if not in Dallas, somewhere else. And maybe you get a little less of the disinterested when it's not my number being called and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and that was my favorite part of the trade. When the Cowboys first made the move, I was a little nervous that they were going to try to extend Pickens for even another year or two. I just don't think that's wise. I think you want to see what he looks like in their offense, in their culture, in their locker room. And I think you're right. Like, if we're ever going to get a focused George Pickens, it's going to be this year. Make him prove it. Make him show that he can be a professional and show up on time, and practice, and learn the offense. I think that's the only way this thing is going to work.
I do want to say about Dallas that I appreciate they'll make a trade like that. We get to the draft, and there are all kinds of names being thrown around as maybe trade candidates, Breece Hall and, I mean, mm-hmm. Jalen Ramsey, obviously. At least Dallas, you know, has the nerve. And I think it's probably better this time that it's not for Jonathan Mingo or Trey Lance.
Or Kyrie Elam, who the Cowboys traded for this offseason. I mean, they're very willing to use those day three picks and even sometimes these early day two picks on guys that were highly thought of at one time. And it's not the worst strategy in the world to take former first-round picks who have talent that maybe just didn't work out in other situations. If you hit on one of the four trades, it's ultimately worth it. I think that's their philosophy. They're just throwing darts. We'll see with Joe Milton, Kyrie Elam, Kenneth Murray, who they traded for, and now George Pickens, if any of these work out.
Milton, right? New England gave them Joe Milton, which was an interesting thing because he looked great against the Bills in that one game, his only game, and I guess they just didn't want the distraction or something. They just basically gave him away.
Yeah, and I think they knew that Joe Milton was just never going to get the practice reps behind Drake May. Whereas in Dallas, because of Dak Prescott's injury history, and I think they're going to be a little smarter about maybe not overworking him in camp, this is just a better opportunity for Milton to develop, get better as a quarterback.
You mentioned not being, entirely sure like what you've got there in this team this year. How much of that is up front? I feel like a strength of the Cowboys through Prescott's time there has been the line. Like they a bunch of first round picks up there. How much is that? We know like there's been a retirement that's affected that, and now we're looking at maybe a rookie stepping in up front at one of the interior positions. How are things looking up there? Is that still a strength of the team, or is that maybe a weaker link than it has been?
They want it to be a strength because they continue to invest a bunch of assets into the offensive line. They spent a first-round pick this year on Tyler Booker, the guard from Alabama. They spent a first-round pick on Tyler Guyton, their left tackle from Oklahoma. A couple years ago, first-round pick on Tyler Smith, another guard. So they want that to be their strength. But you're still talking about some young players who have not played particularly well that they're hoping to develop. And you start the season off with Philadelphia, maybe the league's best pass rush. You play the Giants in week two, who have maybe, one of the best young pass rushes in the NFL. There's a lot of hope that this offensive line will get better as the year goes on. But the first couple of weeks of the season could be pretty rough.
We'll get to Keon Coleman here in your article in just a minute. One more for me, Marcus, on Dallas is maybe an obvious question, but Micah Parsons, how do you think that ends?
He's going to get a contract. I've got no doubt about it. It's just, does it come in June or does it come mid-August? The Cowboys want Micah Parsons to be there. Micah Parsons wants to be a Dallas Cowboy, and the Cowboys have an offer on the table right now which would make him the highest paid defensive player in NFL history. They're close, not close enough to say that the deal's done. But yeah, you don't have to worry. Micah Parsons is going to be in Dallas for the foreseeable future.
Okay.
How about the rest of the defense? Diggs, is that expected to be back on track? I mean, injuries really undid them on that side of the ball last year.
And that's one of the biggest reasons why it's harder to project this Cowboys team moving forward, because Trayvon Diggs, their all-pro cornerback, is coming off yet another knee injury. Some of the whispers have been maybe we won't see him for the first 2 months of the season, and that's putting a lot of stress on someone like Kyrie Elam to now be a starter. DeMarvian Overshown, their top linebacker. he tore multiple knee ligaments late in the season. He's likely not going to be back until Thanksgiving at the earliest. So they just have a lot of guys that are at key spots that they're relying on to get healthy. We could see them without multiple key starters for the first 2-3 months of the year.
Yeah, and another depth piece at corner there was a guy that we talked a lot about here for the Bills coming off an injury from East Carolina, right? Siobhan Revell Jr.
Yeah, and the Cowboys are hopeful that he will be ready for week one, but still you're talking about a third-round rookie who's not played a lot of snaps in college football coming off a torn ACL to start against A.J. Brown on the outside. That could be rough. And I think that's what's so hard about this team is they clearly have talent, but when will all that talent be healthy on the field together? We might not see it at all this season.
Well, at least you get Malik Nabers in week two. Marcus, if the schedule leaks are correct, maybe a little bit tougher for him to get the ball, but still.
It's going to be a rough start to the season for Dallas.
Do you have an Elam take? You say you're down the road in Erie. I don't know how closely you might have followed his career here. Sal Capaccio with us would often say, because there was always a lot of a spotlight on Elam, you know, it wasn't working. And he would talk about, like, he was thought to be a really hard worker and that it wasn't, there's nothing diva about it, nothing sort of easily explained for his struggles. But man, I mean, he couldn't really get on the field. And then in the playoffs, they needed him in that Chief game and it did not go well.
Yeah, he's had a very up and down career, to say the least. Now, the Cowboys are hopeful in Matt Eberflus's defense that he's going to be a better fit. But I don't know anything that we've seen, you know, through the first 3 years of his career suggests that he's suddenly going to turn around. But then again, you don't find cornerbacks on day three of the draft that have his type of talent. So he's a young kid. He hasn't played a ton relative to, you know, other first-round picks. The Cowboys are hoping that their coaching staff can figure it out.
All right, Marcus, let's talk Keon Coleman. You wrote a piece for BuffaloDown.com. I got to make sure I say it right, BuffaloDown.com. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, big words here. Like, one of the most important players in the league this year, mm-hmm. Coleman. What have you seen? And let's hear the argument for why so much here rides on him.
Well, let's talk about the positives, right? If this thing works out and he becomes the X receiver that they drafted and they wanted him to develop to be, I don't know how you stop this Buffalo offense, right? Because now you've got somebody on the outside that can get open, that can win the contested catch balls, who can make plays in the end zone. That's what we saw at Florida State. We saw somebody who could eventually be that player. Now, he's so young and so raw that it was, you know, up and down as a rookie. Now, the wrist injury obviously didn't help, but you're hoping that he can be that big body X receiver. And now you've got Khalil Shakir coming out of the slot, Josh Palmer, who can play inside, outside. If he turns out to be that number one receiver that Buffalo thought they were getting when they drafted him last year, this should be the best offense in the NFL. And if you have one more piece, you know, going up against Kansas City or going up against Baltimore, maybe that's the difference in getting you over the hump.
Yeah, I mean, the focus on the receivers here, I mean, there's been a lot of hoopla here. I don't know how closely you followed it, Marcus, but some of it generated by the station itself and Brandon Bean sort of going off like he did on the Monday following the draft. I feel like, in a way, what he's done by being as aggressive as he's been about defending the guys he's already got here is really put a spotlight on Coleman for sure, and I think also Dalton Kincaid, a first-round player, you know, pass catcher from the year before. So, to me, like, he's turned the heat up not only on himself, but on those two guys and Coleman and Kincaid.
Yeah, and if it doesn't work out, this is why I'm calling him one of the most important players. If things don't work out for Coleman, then this offense, it's still going to be very good, make no mistake about that. But they're not quite as scary. You know, even someone like Mac Hollins, who was on the roster last year, made some pretty big plays last season, especially in the playoffs. He's obviously gone, left in free agency. There's just not a lot of options who can play on the outside on this roster right now, because even someone like Elijah Moore, who they signed after the draft, he's more of a slot player. Josh Palmer's best play comes out of the slot. I don't know who's going to fill that role, and maybe that's where you have to look at a trade midseason, but Coleman is really the only player on this roster that profiles as an outside X receiver. And again, if he hits, I think he can take this offense to another level.
You know, you're in the fantasy space too, Locked On Dynasty. Mm-hmm. And one thing Coleman could do for all of us, make it easier by really standing out, taking that step. Because, I mean, I'm a fantasy content producer as well. And I'm on shows last year, and they know I'm in Buffalo, and they always wanted to know, like, who's going to be the guy? And I stumbled over that question, Marcus, every time. Like, I just, there was no easy answer to that. Shakir, that might he might have the same season every year of his career. And in terms of points, there's not a lot, but it's good. It has NFL real life value. So Coleman could make our lives easier in that front. So I don't have to go like I did last year, going on podcasts touting Marquez Valdez-Scantling, for example.
Yeah, we think Khalil Shakir is basically going to be a flex play for the rest of his life. Now, maybe we're wrong. Maybe he ends up becoming that number one receiver. Clearly, Buffalo thinks he has another level he can get to, and that's why they gave him a contract extension this offseason. But, yeah, it's been very much matchup dependent. Some weeks it's Keon Coleman. Some weeks it was Amari Cooper. Well, not really, but a couple of weeks it was Amari Cooper. It would be nice if there was one bona fide outside receiver that we can say, hey, this guy is locked into 7-8 targets every single week. Coleman obviously has the best opportunity to do that. He's the highest drafted receiver on the team. He's the biggest receiver on the team. Again, he is so incredibly young. And it wasn't like he was unproductive as a rookie.
Right.
He had a pretty decent season. It's just when you were comparing it to someone like, I don't know, Xavier Worthy, who the Bills traded out of, and you saw what Xavier Worthy was doing in some of these games, it made the comparison look a little worse than maybe it was. But, again, we're going into year two. This is where receivers or when receivers generally break out. It's a big-time opportunity for Keon Coleman and the Buffalo Bills.
There's also McConkey, although there's some overlap with him and Shakir. And there's even Brian Thomas, Marcus. Like, that would have been a trade-up, but the Bills have done that sort of thing. Easy to say in hindsight. Our Sneaky Joe had a stat, and I'm probably going to be a little bit wrong here, hopefully only a little bit, about the Bills last season. That it was something like 10 or 11 different players led them in receiving yards in a game, and none of them was Kincaid.
It's ridiculous. And Kincaid, honestly, is probably the most talented of all the receivers and tight ends on the roster.
Even one of them was Tyrell Shavers on a long
one catch and 69 run garbage against time the Jets, right.
Against the Jets. You know, thinking about your dynasty mind as well here, Marcus, what are you doing with Kincaid?
Yeah, this one's really tough because I was a huge fan of Dalton Kincaid coming out of Utah. But, you know, this is somebody who, even going back to his days at Utah, struggled to stay healthy and struggled to stay on the field. And I don't think it's a toughness issue or anything like that, but it's just a lot of nagging injuries. And it seems like whenever he's not 100% healthy, it really impacts his play on the field. I think Buffalo would love to feature him more on the offense, but if you can't stay on the field and you can't be 100% healthy, it's hard to do that. He was somebody who we were ranking as a top 7, top 8 dynasty tight end. And I just don't know how we get there right now after what we've seen from the first two seasons of his career.
Well, he's easy to trade for right now, I would say. Yeah. Like it's a pretty soft market on Kincaid. I look forward to chatting with you again and maybe even meeting. I've met Kate, your Locked On Dynasty co-host at the Fantasy Expo, and that's definitely an area of interest of mine. So I'll start listening.
Yeah, Fantasy Expo is out in Canton, Ohio. It's a lot of fun every single year. I hope to see some listeners there.
Have you been there a number of times? Yeah, I've been three.
Yeah, I've been there all three times. It's been a lot of fun.
All right, let's hang this year in Canton. Thank you, Marcus.
Of course, anytime.
All right. Marcus Mosher, Locked On Cowboys. His Keon Coleman article, one more time, buffalodown.com.
Can't believe we just went 20 minutes without talking about the schedule. I'm in a panic.
I would have mentioned that Chargers Cowboys week 16 just came out, but I didn't want to
make him mad.
Yeah, he didn't. He's not here for
we
the
invited
schedule,
him over to our house. We got you, and I'll be polite.
Dallas prime time. Not all their games are in. There's a few more left, but week 1 at Philadelphia, week 9 Monday night home to Arizona, Thanksgiving, not prime time, but Thanksgiving afternoon, Kansas City. Week 14, Thursday night at Detroit, so that's back-to-back Thursday games for Dallas. Sunday night home, week 15 to Minnesota. And then week 17, that's Christmas afternoon at Washington. Minnesota's got plenty of bright colors on theirs, too. Monday night, week one. Sunday night, week two, home to Atlanta. Is that good?
Ew.
Do they want Cousins on the field or something? Atlanta at Minnesota, week two?
I don't know.
Sunday night football?
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Week four, their game is in green for some reason. That's Dublin. Minnesota at Pittsburgh in Dublin, then at Cleveland in London.
I get it. It's green. It's Ireland.
Week eight.
Good job.
Week eight, Chargers Thursday night, then the Dallas Sunday night I mentioned, and they also play on Christmas against the Lions. Mini. Not that interested in Minnesota, frankly.
I'm interested. I just don't know that I want to assume that they deserve showcases.
All those colors.
Right, right. It's a lot of colors.
Five island games in the first 8 weeks for Minnesota. And the others are against Cincinnati and Philadelphia, plus a bye. Man, this is exciting. So is the PGA Championship to many.
Oh, hello.
Brian Koziol joins us next. We'll get a schedule take or two in with Brian, and then I'll give you my 10 golfers. I've only picked eight so far. I've left two just to be, like, spontaneous.
All right.
Here we go. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, schedule day on WGR.
Always nice to come back to Quail Hollow for obvious reasons. Obviously, great memories from this place. First win on the PGA Tour 15 years ago, you know, winning last year. I probably played my best golf of the year last year here, especially at the weekend. So yeah, you know, look, it's been an amazing 2025, been a lot of great golf, but there's still a lot of golf left to play this year. So, you know, I'm excited for the journey ahead. Looking forward to this week, excited to tee it up in another PGA Championship and give myself another opportunity.
He sounds like somebody I should pick. Making the case for himself this week. History at the golf course, the role that he's on. He's the betting favorite. Rory McIlroy. The PGA Championship starts tomorrow. And we'll take a few minutes here. Welcome Brian Koziol, Tee to Green host, to the show to give us a preview. Hi, Brian.
Gentlemen, good afternoon.
McIlroy, Scheffler, DeChambeau. They really have separated in the odds. You know, we have our game where we have a tier break there. Top three doesn't pay as well as even the fourth favorite. This year, there's a big gap between those three. Tiger used to have Tiger versus the field kind of dominance. I wonder what...
And we were getting there with Scheffler for a little while last year, I thought, but...
I wonder what the odds are, like, one of those three guys wins this week, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, I guess mathematically, maybe we could figure it out because you've got guys that are, you know... What, McIlroy about 4-1, 5-1, kind of in that range.
Yep.
You've got another one very close, and then DeChambeau. I mean, I guess that would be kind of similar to what we used to have with Tiger versus the field. I think it would be one of those three with Bryson versus the field as an interesting bet. But McIlroy on this course, as you mentioned, has been is the betting favorite, but he has just been amazing at Quail Hollow, where it's being held this week. You heard in the soundbite there, he mentioned that was his first victory way back in 2010 when he was 19, but he's won a regular PGA Tour event here four times. Mostly, people might remember it as the Wells Fargo Championship that just changed to the Truist Championship that was played last week at Philadelphia Cricket Club. They moved it because the PGA is hosting at Quail Hollow this year. But it's a course that all the PGA Tour players are pretty familiar with overall, but McIlroy's success at this course is clearly better than anybody else.
Did I catch some criticism of the course earlier this week? Did one pro, maybe Hunter Mahan, I saw, maybe called it soulless? Like, what is the is that right? Am I mistaken?
Yeah, I heard him say that. I guess I take that as maybe that there wasn't anything that stuck out to him that was memorable about it. They did a very, very strong renovation of the course a handful of years ago, and you know, what do they do now? I've heard some of the European players when asked about it this way, they say, oh, they Americanized the course. They make it longer and grow the rough out, and it makes a huge advantage for the long hitters. So it's, I believe, going to play the second longest of any course this year on the PGA Tour schedule. So not a surprise when courses do the renovation. Of course they're going to make it longer, but bring the rough up. You know, it's as similar as we've seen the PGA try to set up their tournament to have a little U.S. Open-like conditions. I think we'll see that similarity a little bit more this year than normal.
So is it, would it be inaccurate to say players in general aren't fans of this place? Maybe I just came across a quote from one guy who doesn't like it. Like, does it have a bad reputation? I mean, it's in the rotation, like you're saying, every year, so I would assume no.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think maybe that was just Mayhem's comments, and I think maybe when asked about it, you know, that was kind of what a couple of the European Tour players just said about it. Like, hey, you know, it had a maybe different character before. Now it's changed, and it's lengthened, and the rough's grown out, and that's just kind of what you get now when you have these courses. And again, they predominantly happen in the United States where they want to host a big-time major event. They feel like they've got to get the length up to where it's at, where – it's, you know, 7,500 yards or plus more, which is what we're going to see this week.
With Brian Koziol, the fourth choice in the odds is Justin Thomas, who won the PGA at this golf course 8 years ago and won last week, I think. So is he kind of back? Do you like him this week?
I think he's probably playing about as good as he has in about three seasons.
Don't tell him until he makes his picks, Brian.
Don't answer. No, I'm always taking the fourth choice. It's just good math.
Correct. You're right, because that's where the different payout starts, for sure. Yeah, I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, he won there his first major there. He's been playing very well. He also won, remember, at the RBC Heritage about 3 weeks ago in that playoff. That was coming off the Masters, and he got his first win in three seasons. 2 years ago, remember, he was the first one out of the FedEx Cup playoffs. He was number 71 out of the 70, kind of hit what he called a career low since he really was a full-time professional. Last year, inconsistent, a little better, but didn't win. And now this year, he's obviously back to playing very, very good golf. So I think he's probably back to being where we had Justin Thomas for the bulk of his career, which is with inside the top 10 and always a threat to really win any major.
The fifth choice is John Rahm. And here's one where I really could go either way, because I haven't seen this guy in forever. What's the status of John Rahm?
Yeah, struggling lately in majors. Last year, I would call it an awful performance in the four majors. This year at the Masters, he did exactly what he did the previous year, which is make the cut right on the number. He had a decent Saturday to kind of get himself up the leaderboard a little bit, but never was a threat. He's been very consistent on LIV. Every event that he's played in on LIV, he's finished in the top 10. So that sounds pretty good. Now, the field size is very low there. We know it's not 144 players. It's essentially less than more than half of that. So it's a little bit easier maybe to finish in the top 10. Only three rounds. You don't have to be as consistent over a longer period of time. But it's still, I think, an impressive number to have, all top 10 since he's joined LIV here 2.5 years ago. But I haven't seen anything from him in the majors that has shown me that he's back to being like at his A-game level. I don't know if going to play LIV, these guys maybe lose a little edge. I know it's probably cliche to say it because it's not the normal format. It's not 4 days of grinding golf. But I haven't seen the best from Rahm since he's joined LIV. So if I'm picking, I'm not picking him.
Interesting. See, I got to keep this honest because Bulldog's all over there like, oh, you're going to ask Brian what he would do. No. I'll take Rahm. That's fine. I feel like there's a little narrative
listen,
streak.
Listen, I don't want that on my head that I guilted you into making a choice. Just, you want him, you want him. I don't care. I do the same thing when I'm picking. I ask Brian and pick his brain. I don't know if they've ever changed a pick.
I'm not serious. It's more just that interesting that he's the fifth choice because he's kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
And he's getting more respect from the bettors than a lot of guys we always pick. Morikawa, Schauffele.
Yeah.
So for him to, I mean, it's got to be in part a golf course thing. I read on this place, it's good if you can bomb it long and straight, and that maybe you don't need to be the best putter. Does that sound like that would make sense?
Yes. And I also think the length might even come into play a little bit more. It's been raining all week. They actually closed the facility to spectators on Monday. The raining was so bad. I don't know if you saw the viral video of Hideki Matsuyama. He was putting literally in puddles with his caddy holding his umbrella over him on Monday. I don't know what he was doing. A lot of debate about what he could possibly be doing putting through puddles on a practice green on a Monday. But it's been raining. Now, they, with the renovation, they did the sub-air system that the folks have at Augusta National. So the greens are still firm for what all the golfers are saying. But you're not going to get much roll in the fairways. So, again, length probably, again, another maybe check in the box of the guys that are going to bomb it, which probably puts Bryson and Rory and I guess you could put Koepka and Rahm, some of these other live guys that maybe don't have the all the, quote, momentum coming in here, that they maybe could be more in the mix just because they do hit it so far off the tee.
Maybe it's just covering all the bases, Brian. Like, if it rains hard enough but they can keep playing, he wants to be ready to putt on really wet greens.
Yeah, I guess. That was quite a scene. He's sitting there with an umbrella. I don't know. The interesting one that I heard from today was Spieth. Like, I was listening to his press conference, and he was asked a little bit more about the Grand Slam, because now that McIlroy obviously just got it, Spieth still goes into every PGA Championship with the opportunity to also join that elite group of six players that have won the Grand Slam ever. And Spieth, because his game has not been good over the last handful of years, or inconsistent at least, sometimes it's not even really a storyline. But this year, because McIlroy just won it, he's been asked a little bit more about it. And Spieth's been better this year. And we know talent-wise, he could, you know, obviously win at any point, but he's been very, very inconsistent off the tee. He says he's worked on gaining more speed so he can gain more distance. He's not noted for being a long hitter, but he's known for having an amazing short game and putting. I'm curious to kind of see how he plays it this week, because he was asked quite a bit about the Grand Slam. He said, look, if I only win one more tournament the rest of my life, he's like, it's the PGA Championship, because that would put me in Grand Slam company with the rest of the elite players of the world, including now McIlroy.
Can't do it. Eat right, go to bed early, never pick Jordan Spieth. Those are a few of my life mottos. All right, here we go. 10 guys. The top three, McIlroy, Scheffler, DeChambeau. Doesn't feel great, but I feel like there's too much separation. I'll take all three. Get my half a unit if one of them wins from each of you. 4, Thomas. We covered him. 5, Oberg. 25-1. I mean, just a guy that can...
He's going to break through at one of these.
Break through, exactly. Yep. Like, okay. Yep. Within the top 20, but barely, is Victor Hovland at 50-1, and I'll go with that. He's similar to me in that way. He's older now, but yeah, than Oberg, I think. But still, we'll do that. That's 6. I've got 2 names from outside of the top 20, 66-1. I'll take my guy Sungjae Im. You know, somebody who's capable of that kind of a week, but something's always gone wrong. For him, I don't know. 66-1. And Russell Henley, top 10 player in the world, top 10 at this course last year as well, 66-1, Russell Henley. So those would be my two X players. And then I'm just sort of thinking through 2 more that are closer to the chalk. And I will take Rahm for the reasons I gave you. And I'll make Shoffley the other one. Didn't he win 2 majors last year, including this one?
Yes.
And I'll leave Morikawa out. You know, bad attitude. Right? Right, Brian? Yeah. I mean, has he atoned for all that stuff with the media? Or where's he at on that?
Nah, he's still been pretty standing by the line that he feels like he was in the right. And again, the talking to the media thing, it seems it's so weird in golf here. It's coming up again. Last week, Straka and Lowry are within a stroke of each other going to the final hole. Lowry 3 putts, he loses, finishes by second, Straka wins, and Lowry blows off his media request. I mean, the guy was at a chance to win. He was talking all week, and they wanted to talk to the runner-up, and he went out of there, and it became another story again of, like, why are the golfers more having the right than other sports? And some of the golfers like Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth are like, look, if we want to be respected like some of these other sports, when we lose, we should have to face, you know, the questions too. I also saw this funny Connor Hallebuck.
Yeah, after losses. I was just going to mention this.
I was like, that popped into my head as I was talking about this. I'm like, I saw that today. I'm like, that was kind of a weird thing to see too. That MVP trophy, an MVP candidate in the league, wouldn't talk. I don't know. It's weird about this, but for golf, sometimes it's so immediate. Like, you're on the 18th green, you're getting interviewed about you missing the last putt. Like, there's not the, quote, cool-down period. I don't know. I still feel like they should know that the value and the position they are, they should at least say something.
I'm,
not just walk
I,
off.
I apologize if everyone knows about it. You guys obviously do. Did this happen while I was in Colorado?
No.
What happened with Morikawa? I didn't know he had a thing.
Was it the Players, Brian? Was pre-Masters?
Oh boy, yeah, I missed it.
It was I think it might have been the Players. It was a bigger event for sure, and he kind of just blew off the media, similar to like Lowry, where the ending didn't go well, and it came back up again because McIlroy did it last year at the U.S. Open,
right?
And Players have had really kind of like dividing in the sand. Justin Thomas says, look, we have to grow our game. We lost people because of the whole Live PGA Tour thing. We got to win people back. And he said, part of what people want with athletics and sports and professional sports is access. And he's like, if we walk away, not only do we look like sore losers, but we lose the access to the public that we're trying to gain support of. He's like, that's how our tour succeeds. So the Players are pretty like, on one side or the other. I don't hear a lot of just on the fence, which you normally do. Some players are very, very, like, you know, gung-ho. Like, it's your responsibility. If we want to be like other big sports, we got to talk. And then some other players are like, why should I? Why should somebody stick a mic in my face when it's over? It's interesting because if each individual is given a pretty strong opinion on it, which normally, obviously, you know, they usually like to just ride the fence and not say anything. But it's been interesting to hear some of the back and forth on it.
All right.
Sweet Home Lancaster starting at 5. Hold Brian to this. Media listening now, covering this match.
Right.
If Sweet Home loses, you know, Brian should still give you a quote. That's what he's telling us. That's how it's supposed to work. Grow the game.
That's correct. The media after high school tennis matches is tough. That's why I usually try to slip out the back door behind the court. That's right.
Well, good luck to your boys, and we'll talk again tomorrow if you have time.
Sounds great. Okay, guys.
Brian Koziol on the Western Hotline.
If anyone didn't know what Brian was referring to when he referenced Hellebuck there, I think we probably both saw the same tweet this morning. The tweet I saw was him talking in front of his locker after last night's loss, and the caption of the tweet said, Hellebuck, who never speaks after losses, blah, 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 blah. And a few people, like the first thing I saw was somebody quote tweeting that, like, never talks after losses? What is that? You only come out to talk to everybody after you've had a good game? Like, that's odd for a guy of that stature. I mean, he's a superstar in the league.
That's too bad because usually hockey player quotes are so interesting. I don't disagree. 803-0550, back to the Bills schedule and what we know after this on WGR. Derrick Henry got a new contract. Did you see James Cook congratulate him on Twitter?
I did not notice that, but that's it's not surprising, I guess. No.
Derrick Henry, week one. Sinking in some of these games, like now that you can put a date on them. That's how the Bills season will start. Sunday night against Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, and the Ravens. Of course, the Ravens have 2 playoff losses here, beat the Bills badly in the regular season last year, sort of a reverse Bills-Chiefs thing. Certainly be a lot of talk about the 2 quarterbacks. They are going to be linked forever. Same draft, same NFL debut. Right. Allen and Jackson met in week one as backups and rookies in 2018. It was each of them, the game was so out of hand, they both played. And Allen never looked back, started the next week.
Right.
Jackson took like half the season.
Took a little while, and then they got around to it. Right.
But they made the playoffs with him that year. So that's week one. The Bills have 2, if not 3, we think, 1 o'clock home games. And that's it. 2 Sunday nights, a Thursday night, all early on the calendar, if not on the clock. Then 3 later season, mid to late season, 4:25 games that are scheduled, including Kansas City in week 9. The Chiefs' bye is in week 10. So we will not have to listen to Andy Reid off the bye.
Mm-hmm.
Let's find out what his record is before the bye.
Still probably pretty good.
Not bad, I would think. I'd agree. The Bills' bye, we think, in week 7. And then they go to Carolina after that. I don't know what Carolina's record is in any way about bye weeks and anything like that. I don't know, but
no.
Week 8, Bryce Young with the Steelers and the Browns, 2 teams with uncertain quarterback situations. those look like both late season games. So we're a long way from knowing, like, if Pittsburgh and Cleveland are bad, better chance with the Browns. It could be Shedeur Sanders in week 16 who the Bills face, right, and they would definitely not face him in week one. I say definitely.
Highly unlikely, at the very least, and probably definitely.
Probably definitely, yeah.
Probably definitely. How do you like that, folks?
We'd like to know what you think, like, dislike about the schedule now that we think we know it, and we'll run more of it down. Not everybody maybe has seen what we think is the finished product. 803-0550 for your calls. Sal is scheduled at 6. I just texted him to see if he wants to come on next, and he does. So we'll have Sal next, and then we'll talk to fans, hopefully. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, WGR.